Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, you're listening to The Future of Media Explained with me, Press Gazette Editor-in-Chief Dominic Ponsford. And this week, we're going to be talking about AI in the newsroom. Joining me on The Future of Media Explained sofa this week is Press Gazette data journalist Aisha Majeed. Hi, Aisha.
Hi, Dom. Nice to be back again.
Nice to have you. So for the listeners, I made no excuse for returning to the thorny subject of generative AI. There's a lot going on, and we've talked a lot about it in theory. We've talked a lot about copyright and about the sort of threat to publishers of having their content stolen or used without recompense by ChatGPT. And others. But this week, we're going to learn about some practical uses of the technology at a big European publisher. Is that right, Aisha?
Yeah. This week, I spoke to Treya Lankreet. She's from Media House. I always have fun with the pronunciation of that. And she's
a bit of a hospital pass there. I'll let you get the pronunciation in. For fun, I'm just going to have a go. Media House. But I think, having spoken to before, I think it's very acceptable for people in our sort of jurisdiction just to say Media House.
That's what I went with when I spoke to her. Just said Media House, just keep it simple.
I think that's a sort of style guide point for the podcast is we're going to go Media House and not try and get Flemish or sort of Belgium with it. And so I got diverted. But what are Media House up to?
So we had a chat about how they use AI broadly across the company, across the business. Obviously, you know, we chatted about how they're, like a lot of publishers, starting to use generative AI. So things like ChatGPT, of course, but how they've used sort of more, I guess, traditional AI as well across the newsroom and across the business for a few years. So helping a lot with not necessarily just journalism, but everything about sort of running a major publisher. So we got into some of that as well.
Okay. Well, look, before we go to Media House, what do we know about AI in the newsroom so far? I'm thinking that there's been a couple of examples, but it's not really, when we're talking about generative AI, there's not much use of it in the wild, just for the good reason that it's a bit unpredictable and it will come up with hallucinations. It won't say what it knows. It says what it thinks it wants you to hear. So it's a bit unpredictable like that. But I know BuzzFeed used it to create quizzes. They did some travel guides on it, but that just looked like a bit of an experiment. I don't think they've done any more with that, and they looked fairly bland what they did. And Future have been using like an AI chatbot on one of their sites called Tom's Guide. And actually, I'm thinking about it, I think quite a few sites have done that, used like a license or a ChatGPT to create bots on their own sites. But again, I think that's fine, but I think it's also a bit like whatever. The bot doesn't tell you much more, really, than you would find out just by doing a search on the site. It's just, and you have to ask it a very precise question. So, yeah, I don't know. Anything else you can think of, Aisha, in terms of uses of it in the wild, generative AI?
I think the way most newsrooms are probably using it now, and you will hear about this from Media House as well, is to generate summaries and bullet points, things like that. So to take what journalists have already done. And then take away maybe some of those repetitive or not so interesting tasks.
Okay. Well, look, always interested to hear what up to at Media House, not least because I think they are one of the possible buyers of the Telegraph at the moment, aren't they? They're certainly like an acquisitive media company who will be taking a look at it. And they've grown a lot. Just before we talk to them, remind us who they are. What do they do?
So Media House, yeah, they're a big publisher of newspapers and magazines across Europe. You mentioned Belgium, the Netherlands. They also publish a few things in Ireland, the Belfast Telegraph, the Sunday Independent. So they're a multinational publishing company.
They're big, aren't they? And they're growing, quite big on tech. Let's hear from them. How did you kick off the interview?
So I started by asking Treya Lankreet, who is their Data and Insights Director, how they use AI across the business. So can you tell me, when did Media House get started with AI and how broadly across the business are you using it at the moment?
Okay, I think we started using it before I joined Media House with personalization with an external company. I think it's more than 5-6 years ago, maybe 7-8 even. But if we define AI in a broad sense, like also trained models, etc., then we are actually using it in different areas. We are using it in forecasting, in everything that's sales, like churn and propensity to buy. In the newsroom, we have recommendation engines, we have personalization in the newsroom. So it's quite broad. Where we are not using it, where we could use it quite easily, in HR and in finance, all with the forecasting, it's more in the business than in finance, actually. But all the other departments are using it. We are not using it in e-commerce either, but we are also using it in advertising with the data products that we are actually creating for the advertisers.
And in terms of using it for generating text, I mean, do you use it to write summaries for stories or anything like that?
Yeah, the text generation part, we did several tests. What is actually in production now is the summarizer or the news condenser. It's a more a marketing name. And it takes a text and it does three things. It creates bullet points, what's in the text. It creates a summary text. And it creates also headlines, suggestions for headlines. So you have like 10 different headlines that they can choose from that actually present the content of that article. And that's actually in production now, and it's going to be in our CMS. So it will be integrated in the CMS, so it will be in the daily working environment. But next to that, you also need to train the news people, because not every text is suitable to do summaries about. And if you don't understand algorithms, you might think that a logical text like this happened and then that happened, so the result is that would be easier, but it's text. So it's not a logical algorithm. It just looks at the text. And sometimes those logical texts are not really fit to summarize. So to avoid that, they say, okay, it doesn't work. We need to train them on that. And then the next step, what we also have is a recommendation engine on headlines, on improving headlines. So the 10 headlines that come out of them, we can also put together, okay, what would work best on conversion or maybe on attention time or maybe depending on the metric they want. And then like that, they could choose, or maybe we also do recommendations to optimize the headline if they want. So that combined will be part of the headline studio. So that's something that we are doing currently. We also tested with ChatGPT, of course. It's easy now. It's more accessible for everyone. And we looked at one of our authors who was writing about tech, etc. So he was interested to see whether this could work. And we tried to make ChatGPT write a text in his style. So, and that's something we tested. It's not something that is already usable. I believe that the generative AI on text, what we currently have, will be only helping newsrooms for the next 5 years. It's not good enough yet to write text for a newsroom because it's new, right? So, and it takes data from the past. I think we focus too much on the newsroom. I think it would be usable, like, if I have to write a vacancy, for instance, I use ChatGPT. I say, okay, write me a vacancy for a data strategist. And then I get something really nice. So it's a lot better usable in all those departments, in marketing as well. Marketing messages are not that original, not always. So we could easily have in everything that digital marketing, you could easily automate the creation of text as well. A lot faster than for the newsroom, I think.
Yeah, we do seem to be hearing or reading a lot about AI in the newsroom and the potential. You know, some people think it's going to make the job of journalists easier. Other people think it's going to make some types of journalists obsolete. I mean, obviously, you just mentioned that it has a big use in other kinds of departments, not necessarily mm-hmm. creating stories. But what's been the response among the journalists in your newsroom to sort of your use of your use of AI?
Maybe first I want to nuance. I think maybe in 10 years, I think the job of a journalist will change, and it will still will be important for a journalist to do deep dives and asking the right questions and be critical. But writing the text will be a lot more automated. So it will be less, am I a good writer? You might have more journalists that can't write, but they don't have to because it's not necessarily a part of that. But it won't be so fast as in other departments. And their reaction is actually, I think they're quite open. Of course, you have different people responding differently, but they all, I think that really changed with ChatGPT because we did workshops before on the future of the newsroom. And AI wasn't even on the agenda. I put AI on the agenda and then they scored it as very unlikely to happen. So it was really weird. And then ChatGPT happened and all of a sudden people kind of realized, okay, this is happening now. So we have to react. And they kind of know that, yeah, it's going to be there and it's going to be a part of their job. It's no use to ignore it because it's not going to go away. So they are most of them are quite open. And then the way we approach things is also that we find someone who is willing to test something, we create a product, and then we show it to them. And that kind of reassures them. Like for the summary as well, if you talk to a journalist, okay, we're going to create summaries of your text, they kind of, what? No, this is my text and nobody, and not automated. I've been really thinking and putting a lot of thought in that, so I can understand. But when we make a minimum viable product and we show them which kind of use cases that when we want to put content on social media or somewhere else or the headlines that are coming out, then they are a lot more positive. They see that it helps them that to do more than they currently have. So I think it might help. We're also doing speech to text, for instance, and that's really something that sometimes they decide not to do an interview because they don't have the time to write it out. And yeah, they balance cost, effort versus how valuable it is. And then they don't do it. And with speech to text, they could easily do the interview and then have a basic text because that's very time consuming, just writing all the text down. And if they then have a basic text automatically created for them, then they are going to do the interview. So they can create more value using AI than it's not just replacing things that they do. So it's quite positive. In general, it's quite positive. They are also scared, of course, for the future, but most of them are positive and open for that.
And have there been any lessons learned so far in your AI journey, things to do or things not to do, even that you've started and dropped? Or
yeah, I think, first of all, the way you approach AI, I think what we do is start small and then showcase it. That really works. We put a lot of time in talking to the people that are supposed to use it. So you might slow down your process, but in the end, the adaption goes a lot quicker. And I think that's important. We put a lot of people also that play that role between business and the data scientists. So they kind of translate it and create. So I think that the way you do it is important. And then, yeah, we've been like in Article DNA, we've tried to add a lot of automated text to the articles. I think those things are very difficult to explain to the newsroom for complexity. For instance, we say, okay, this text is more complex than another text, but it's an algorithm. So now and then it's just wrong, right? If people see that, they start losing confidence. But if the error is always the same for an analyst's point of view, that's fine. We can do something with that. So we try to put those NLP-based or AI-based texts not in front of a newsroom. We use them to analyze and we are just trying to create insights on that. But it turned out to be very hard. So we kind of paused that. A second thing we paused is the habit creation, because we are saying, okay, we have to increase intention time. But you could also imagine that there are people that use our product just to be quickly updated with news, and then they will never have a high attention time, but it would be a habit. They would keep returning. So we search for patterns in the behavior. That was very hard. It's very time consuming. I'm still convinced that it can add value and that we can do something with it. But it was very time consuming. You can kind of test those kind of things and never find something. And because we had other priorities, we kind of stopped that as well. So I'm not advising that maybe we shouldn't do that, but you should give the data scientists also a framework, because they can really get lost in all the analysis and then continue doing analysis without any return. So that's, I think, the biggest parts that we've learned.
And in terms of the risks, I guess, thinking more sort of like the ethical side of AI and the risks there, obviously there's a lot of talk about like AI, misinformation, disinformation, so on. But in terms of the risks within your newsroom, I mean, do you have a way of sort of mitigating those? Are you thinking about those already?
Yes. In general, what we're doing is we are monitoring our algorithms, and we are kind of testing automatically whether there are systems for that. So that's what we're doing on the technical side. And then on more the human side, let's say, or the ethical side, which is technically not a problem, but maybe ethical if we start using texts from somebody else, etc. That's not. So we created an ethical framework for within the newsroom to use. So we have different points there, and human intervention is actually one of those points. And I think it's a document that will evolve, but it's very good that we have it. It's a basis for all the newsrooms, and they still have a lot of freedom to handle. It's more a direction than actually saying you can't do this, but more like a general opinion on how we should work with AI.
Hi, I'm Anoush, and I host the New Statesman podcast. Twice a week, we get under the skin of Westminster to help understand what's going on and what's going to happen next. We interview politicians, policymakers, and people on the front line to get you the full story behind the headlines. Plus, hear from our award-winning editorial team, including political editor Andrew Marr, to get to the bottom of what on earth is happening. Listen to the New Statesman podcast. You can subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.
Are there any sort of areas that you know that you definitely won't be using AI for, or is everything on the table now?
Well, I think there will be, like for HR, for instance, before ChatGPT, a lot of articles around AI went to career planning or how to make sure that you have the right resources in the right place, a lot about HR stuff. We probably will use some AI, but it's also very sensitive there. You talk about people, it's privacy sensitive, plus each country has different rules. So we probably won't use it in the extreme. There are a lot of use cases in HR, but that's an area where we would be very careful. And then secondly, also some things are just, if it's a lot of data, it's too expensive to do AI for. Everything that's simple and can be an if-then algorithm, we wouldn't use AI. Like there's a lot of discussion about the layout of a paper, of a print product, that we say, okay, let's automate this and use AI. Well, if we want to automate this, I don't think we should use AI. It would be too expensive to use AI for that. And there will be errors in it also when you use, if you use AI, it will to optimize the white spaces. And weird things will happen. So just do this manually. So that's the areas I currently think of. But on the other hand, it's not don't use AI, but more like the way you use it or how far-fetched it is, how automated are you going to use it or not. And I think in a lot of areas, it won't but will not automate everything. It will be like more recommendation or suggestion, etc.
So question of degree, I suppose. And in terms of what's next for Media House, AI-wise, I mean, what's the next priority in the newsroom or across the business for using AI?
Yeah, well, we have different projects running now. So we wanted to accelerate now with ChatGPT. All of a sudden, it becomes really important and we are accelerating on that. And we really want to, we are already testing. So the headline optimizer, we are continuing to do, and the summarizer we are continuing to do, everything around personalization we want to speed up and have it more everywhere actually. And then I'm trying to talk to B2C people to have more in the marketing and in sales area, also for HR there. We have a knowledge sharing platform and a learning platform. I think AI could really work there better than what we have today. But what is on the planning is more in the newsroom. So the text-to-speech for the interviews, also to have a more intelligent search on our archive. That's also already in a project. And also fact-checking for the elections that are coming up in some of the countries. We want to do that as well. And also within data and insights, we already created once a chatbot that created insights. So if people have questions, how many people, how many prospects do we have? And they want to look at the different tables to find it, they could ask the chatbot and it would give back the data. So that's something we've already developed a few years ago. But yeah, the time wasn't right there. But I think now the time might be right for people to use that as well.
And then I wanted to ask you in terms of, I mean, you're experimenting with AI in different areas. I mean, do you have any tips for other publishers on, you know, how to kickstart their AI journey in their newsrooms from what you've learned so far?
It's always the same. You have to start with qualitative data. It's very dangerous to have your data not in order and then start using that, because then something will come up, which is quite horrifying. And then secondly, well, with ChatGPT, I think it's easy. It's very easy for every developer. You don't have to be a data scientist to do something with that. So as a company, if you look around, there will be a lot of people that are taking initiatives and start creating stuff, etc. Bring those people together in some kind of community and have them coming up with ideas, because they are passionate about it, because they're already working with it. And they come from different areas and they will have new kind of ideas. So that's something I think it's good to set up. I don't believe in a setup in a different area, like, yeah, this is the AI department, because it's everywhere. It's like data. It's everywhere. So it just should be part of your data science team. They are already doing it before. And it's not because it became a hype now that they shouldn't be doing it again. And like I said before, start small, test it, and be ready to stop doing things. And you shouldn't always do it yourself. You can test external companies, but make sure that you understand it or that it runs in your environment so you can learn from it. I think we don't want to make external vendors smarter. This is really something totally different from a normal technology, like paywall. Yeah, you don't need a paywall. That needs to be technical, right? But everything that's AI or data science in general, it's about your user, the knowledge about your user, how they behave in your product, in the way you communicate with them. It's your relationship with your user. And if you do too much of that outside, you lose the knowledge. And then a second reason why I think you should do it inside, because if you use 10 vendors, they will start doing recommendations, not talking to each other. And then you will have contradictory things maybe in some areas. Or if you put it in the front of it to your readers, they might have a really strange experience, because they might do suggestions, the same suggestions based on a different background. And you want to make sure that if you put different algorithms in working, that they talk to each other, and that you also have, okay, if those two are competing, then this one will win or something. You have to have rules like that. So I think it's important that you have good people in house that understands how it works. And well, if you want to have them, you have to make sure that they can do something themselves as well. Otherwise, they won't stay. So, yeah.
Well, thank you. A lot of very useful insights.
Thanks for that, Aisha. Great to hear from Treya Lankri there at Media House. Great that we're just pronouncing Media House now as well, not trying to overthink it. What do you think then about, you know, in terms of what we know so far and just listening to that interview, in terms of sort of generative AI in the newsroom? Is it going to be the next metaverse / NFTs / whatever the last big thing was? Or do you think it's going to be lasting, meaningful, and be a good thing or a bad thing for journalism?
Well, I think, I mean, at the moment, it's probably not good enough to replace journalists, which is good news. I don't know what's going to happen in the future. But I mean, it seems like the way obviously newsrooms are looking into it now, it's something to enhance journalism, make our jobs easier rather than replace us. But I mean, one of the big things and that, you know, that we heard in the interview is sort of how it's going to be regulated. I guess it's up to newsrooms to put policies in place, how much they want to use it, whether they want to use it at all. So, I mean, Media House have their ethical framework, but I don't think everyone has one yet. So, I mean, really crystal ball, really. I don't know how it's going to go, but I think at least for the next few years, we're safe.
What more can you ever say in journalism? I always think I'll settle for the next 6 months and then take it from there. But it's good to hear that they're talking about regulation, isn't it? And I guess the real challenge will be getting the publishers to all get together and agree on some sort of form of regulation that's going to be mutually beneficial. So the AI companies are kind of controlled in some way. And then I guess the publishers themselves and journalists self-regulating. I bet there are people already using it to take some dangerous shortcuts. And I guess in the absence of regulation, that's just going to happen, isn't it? Mind boggles to think about what an unscrupulous journalist who wanted to save, you know, a few hours could do with it, and then what sort of mistakes could start creeping in if people aren't careful. You've been listening to The Future of Media Explained. With me, Chris Kizer, Editor-in-Chief, Dominic Consford, our data reporter, Aisha Majid, and expertly produced for the last time by Adrian Bradley. So thanks for all your work on the podcast, Adrian. If you'd like The Future of Media Explained, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to check out pressgazette.co.uk, where we've got a whole section on artificial intelligence. Thanks for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.